Nuketown Radioactive, number 20, for Monday, November 14th, 2005. Okay, so I know that, you know, the original Battlestar Galactica is cheesy and, you know, can, you know, just you know, doesn't hold a flame up to the new Battlestar. But, you know, there's no way that you can listen to that intro and not just, I don't know, get thrilled. I mean, it's a great freaking introduction. And as much as I love the soundtrack and the intro for the new Battlestar, man, I wish they could have found some way, maybe as the outro or whatever, to incorporate this in here. I mean, maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's almost too triumphant for the new Battlestar, you know? I think too positive. The new Battlestar is much much more darker and grittier than the original ever was. But anyway, since, you know, Nuketown still doesn't have a theme song, I'm still going with the theme songs for other shows. So I thought I really had to go with Battlestar. So, I am your host, Ken Newquist. This is Radioactive number 20. We're almost back on schedule. Unless something catastrophic happens, this should be up tomorrow. And that catastrophic would be my wife deciding that she's ready to go to bed and wants me to give Jordan a bath. But anyway, things are going pretty good on the home front now that all of the computer issues have been resolved. Home improvements are continuing. Next Sunday I'll be painting the bathroom, and which means, you know, great opportunity for listening to podcasts, right, as we've established earlier. And then sometime in the next 2 weeks we're getting carpet installed downstairs in our living room and library, which will be really cool. I mean, one of the things we've been talking about, Sue and I've been talking about, was the idea that we'd just kind of the stress levels around the house and the idea that we'd like our house to be more of a place where we come home and relax, rather than, you know, where we just kind of come home and collapse. and to that end, you know, the carpet downstairs it's hand-me-down carpet. I don't even know where the heck we got it from. I think we got it from Sue's brother from his apartment. So it's blue, it's dingy, it's got stains in it. We've got a couple of different pieces that make up the carpet that's actually in the library. And then we have, like, this area rug that's in the family room, but it's, or in the living room, but, you know, it's seen better times too. So we're decided to spend a little money and actually, you know, buy carpet downstairs. And, you know, it's going to be part of a whole upgrade down there. We're planning on painting some of the walls, and we're planning on doing just, you know, all kinds of little things that hopefully will make a difference and just make that whole area downstairs feel a little more homey and a little less just, I don't know, a little less college dormish. You know, we've been out of college for 10 years. It'd be nice if our downstairs would kind of reflect that. I mean, we do have some nice furniture. I mean, we definitely have moved beyond the milk crate phase, but we haven't really gone beyond the phase that, you know, between, okay, you've bought real furniture, now your house actually needs to have carpet that you didn't inherit from somebody. You know, we'd like to get to the point where everything in the house is no longer hand-me-down, or that we got from some other place. Anyway, other big thing on the Nuketown front is the Geek Tree. Yeah, I'm gearing up for this year's Geek Tree. Now, for those of you who don't know, this is my personal Geek Tree. This is the one I had to create when my wife decided that there were enough geek ornaments on the main Christmas tree. So, in years past, I had this small little tree, and I put all my geek ornaments on it. And it stood, I guess it stood like 4 or 5 feet tall, and it was a nice little tree. But eventually, I got way too many ornaments. I think at this point, I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 ornaments for the Geek Tree. Or at least I will. I think it's at like 47 right now, and I'll probably have around 50-something by the time this holiday's over. So, last year I got like this 7-foot-tall tree. It's like a really narrow tree. It's maybe 3 feet in diameter, 7 foot tall, and it's perfect for the Geek Tree because we can put it in the corner. It looks really nice. But anyway, I'm in the process of just getting ready to assemble that tree. I mean, one of the things I needed to do, there's actually a feature for this on Nuketown, and I'll include a link to it in the show notes. But I hadn't updated that in like 2 years, so I have this spreadsheet where I record all the ornaments for all kinds of different reasons. You know, if the house burned down, you know, for insurance reasons, and for just to know what I have. And I use it on the site so I can give a list of all the stuff that actually appears on the Geek Tree. So I have to update all that stuff. And what I'm planning on doing, and this is kind of contingent on when the aforementioned carpet shows up, is getting the Geek Tree set up and then taking some decent photos of it. I got a new digital camera, so hopefully that'll actually allow me to do that. And just, you know, kind of beef up the feature a little bit. People really seem to enjoy it. I've gotten 2 emails from people over the last, 2 weeks just really enjoying the whole idea of the Geek Tree. And it's definitely proven popular over the years with the Nuketown crowd. So I think I'm probably going to dedicate an entire podcast to the Geek Tree to the Geek Tree and just, you know, geek Christmas type stuff, geek holiday type stuff, with maybe the first week in December. Now, I want to mention that I did get an email from a listener, Sue Grossong. Apologize in advance if I massacred her name, who joined the podcast from Slice of Sci-Fi, and she sent me some feedback saying that she really enjoyed the Star Blazers theme song, and now as I'm reading through my show notes, I realize she had recommended some books in the line of, whatchamacallit, the... She had listened to the podcast that was talking about Amber, and she had some book recommendations that weren't necessarily in the same Amber theme, but thought that I might like, and now that I look at the show notes, I realize that I didn't actually include them. But I will include them by the time the show goes live, so if you're looking for something that is reminiscent, I guess, of the Amber books, check that out. One last thing. I've been threatening to do a review of the Mirror Mask soundtrack since before the Time of Troubles in October, and I'm still planning on doing that. I'm looking to do it for number 21, which may actually come out very quickly. If I can get it done this week, I'm going to, and it'll come out between this podcast and the next one. I know some people like the music podcast, some people don't, so this will just kind of be like an extra one thrown in there for you.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn. I wish I'd visited Yogg-Sothoth.com more often.
Yogg-Sothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
The Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from Yogg-Sothoth.com.
So, for sites of note this week, actually, and I really need to come up with a better name for this section, you know, like, thermonuclear destinations, or, I don't know, something more themed than just boring old sites of note. But anyway, I digress. First site I want to talk about this week is actually a podcast. It's the Dragon's Landing podcast, which is a podcast dedicated to role-playing games, with largely with a focus on D&D, but, you know, they actually branch out and talk about a bunch of different genres as well. I spent an awful lot of time listening to this podcast while painting my porch a few weeks back, and I really enjoyed what they had to offer. I mean, there's a smattering of news, but you know, they occasionally venture into meaty topics like world building, resources for gaming on the cheap, and they've had interviews with folks like Monty Cook of Dungeons & Dragons 3.0 and Mojavik Press fame, and I'm really looking forward to them getting him back again. So overall, it's got a really good mix. It's about the show's average to be about an hour long, and it's really, again, it's the kind of podcast that I like listening to when I just need to recharge my my gaming batteries, particularly when I've been kind of, you know, everybody gets burned out on gaming at one point or another, and I'm not necessarily getting burned out, but you know, you just get a little tired. There's some frustrations, you know, that come with running a game or being in a game or whatever, and it's just fun to just kind of sit back and listen to people talking about the game, and you know, you start thinking about the different things you could do and the things you could do as a DM, and just you know, you come across these different resources that you can make use of. It's just, you know, it really just kind of recharges your batteries. So I definitely think that Dragon's Landing is a good podcast. I wholeheartedly recommend it. So go ahead and check it out at www.dragonslanding.com. And of course, a link for this and all the other sites that I mentioned will be in the show notes. Now, next up is UncleBear.com, which I have been reading for years. And while its approach has varied, its content has never really disappointed. It's a general interest role-playing game site, which occasional incursions into the larger geek-slash-weird world. So you can expect posts about gaming news, reminders of genre birthdays. I love when Baron, the guy who runs the site, he's been doing it a lot recently, but he posts like a cover from a book and then says happy birthday so-and-so author, which is just cool because, you know, it kind of reminds you of these authors that maybe you haven't read in a little while, you know. And also he has editorials, or just, I don't know if I would necessarily call them editorials, but just like kind of like little feature stories about topics such as power gaming, classless Dungeons and Dragons, getting into kind of like the how and what of your game, less than just, hey, you know, more the superficial, just kind of, hey, this is happening kind of stuff, you know, really getting into why does a game work, why does a game not work. This site is also home to the 10-foot wiki, which is a JavaScript-powered wiki designed to be used as an offline or online campaign journal. I've been playing around with it. I'm actually thinking of converting my Spycraft campaign, my dormant Spycraft campaign, over to this, just because it's a really useful way of keeping track of just your campaign notes, especially for smaller campaigns. It doesn't necessarily handle large multi-year campaigns all that great. It does get to a point where it kind of breaks down. I mean, it is running on JavaScript, and it is basically just one big file. But, you know, for small campaigns, one-shots, that kind of thing, I think this thing is awesome. I'm really looking forward to playing around with it some more. It's also, UncleBear.com is also home to an extensive free font archive, which is useful when maybe you're wanting to do handouts, or maybe you're creating a new gaming site and you know, a new campaign site, and you want to have a specific font, like a Babylon 5 font or something. It's a really great site for that kind of stuff. It also has an active community forum, which I've been participating in for years. And by years, I mean, when I talk about I've been reading Uncle Bear for years, I've been reading Uncle Bear, I think, since 96, 97. I mean, it's one of the few sites that I found when I first started on the web, that is still around. So really, I'm a diehard reader here. Anyway, they've got a good forum, good group of people there. I've been participating in it a while. And, you know, if you're looking for thoughtful, well-reasoned posts from a variety of perspectives, and not all just about D&D, it's definitely well worth a visit. Now, venturing into comic books, you know, I've always struggled with keeping up with my X-Men storylines, all the more so since switching comic book stores back in September and missing a couple of important issues in the whole House of M storyline. So I was just kind of like searching for different websites that might deal with the X-Men, and I came across a cool site called the X-Access, which is a review site. It provides reviews of different X-Men titles each week, and it also maintains an upcoming page that lists what titles are coming out when, and just as importantly, what titles have slipped from week to week, and what effect that slippage has on the rest of the storyline, or the rest of the, you know, the product line. Which, and why this is so useful is, you know, I'm sitting there, and I'm reading my books, and I'm like, I'm going through my comic books and going, okay, well, why don't I have Mutopia number 5? Did it come out and I just missed it? Or is it just out there in Netherland. Well, after reading this site, I know that it just slipped. You know, it also has kind of a good overview picture of what's going on with the X-Men, which is exactly the sort of thing I need. Because, you know, as a 30-something dad, I don't have the kind of time I had when I was, like, a teenager or even in my 20s to keep track of what the heck is going on with the X-Men. This site really, really helps out with that. It offers a weekly newsletter, which will email you the reviews, which is done through a Yahoo group. And unfortunately, there's no RSS feed, but you know what? That's okay. The newsletter's just fine. So, you know, if you're an X-Men fan, I definitely recommend checking out this site.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network. TSFPN.com.
Star Wars was fantasy masquerading as science fiction. Dragonflight, by Anne McCaffrey, is science fiction masquerading as fantasy. Now, I had to dig pretty deep into my science fiction library to get this week's book review out. But this is a book that I think... I really love this book. It was really influential in just my kind of science fiction development. It was a book I found back when I was in high school, and I love this book. I love this whole series. And I think, you know, I read these books so many times in high school. You know, the covers were falling off. I had to, you know, get Scotch tape and tape the covers back on because, you know, this, Watership Down, the Foundation books, you know, they were almost always in my backpack, through high school. You know, it was a great way to just kind of escape from the everyday just kind of blah of that is, you know, high school in the 1980s. Anyway, this book takes place on a distant world long ago colonized by humanity, so long ago that its origins to those individuals living on the planet are all but lost to time. I mean, they know that they're colonists, but they can't really remember where they came from, how they got there, or what that larger society was like. Now, the descendants of these long-ago colonists have formed a feudal society based on certain ancient precepts, established to protect them from an extraplanetary threat, a mythological terror that can consume anything organic, from plants to people. This element is called Thread, and while they're still aware of it, they're not really taking the Thread all that seriously anymore. Now, back when Thread was a threat, I can speak today, what protected people from this stuff was dragons. Real, honest-to-God, fire-breathing dragons that would burn this Thread from the sky. Now, it has been centuries since this Thread has appeared, and as a result, you know, people are beginning to think that it's not going to come around again. It had been coming around again, like, every century for 1,000, 2,000 years, something like that. And as this book opens, it hasn't appeared for like 300, 400 years. And as a result, people are getting kind of lax in the rules, you know, in enforcing the sort of mores that had been established to keep everybody safe from this threat. So stuff like making sure that people only lived in stone dwellings, or that nothing organic, nothing green actually grew near these stone holds, that sort of thing, and actually, you know, paying respect to the dragon riders who were supposed to protect them. There's also a concept that each lord holder, each sort of lord of the land, was only supposed to have one hold, one kingdom that he ruled. He wasn't supposed to try and go and conquer others because he couldn't protect those areas from the threat of Thread. Well, as this book opens, you know, the dragon riders are in decline, Thread hasn't appeared for a long time, and we've got a warlord running amok trying to conquer multiple kingdoms. Now, we also are introduced to Lessa, who is a woman in... Now, you know, this is one of those things. I've read this book so many times, but I've never actually had to say any of the words. She's a woman in Ruatha Hold who is the sole survivor of her family's bloodline, who were wiped out by the selfsame merciless warlord. We also meet a dragon rider named Flare, who's traveling from hold to hold looking for dragon rider candidates. Now, there are different kinds of dragons, from the mighty bronzes to the stalwart browns to the small but fast-moving blues and greens, But these are all males. There's only one female, which is a golden queen. It's only ridden by women. Now, it turns out that a golden egg has been laid, and the dragon riders must go through the different kingdoms trying to find candidates who could impress these dragons. Now, the way that all of this, or could impress this golden dragon. Now, the way that this basically works is that a clutch of eggs is laid, and then they have all of these candidates who stand on the sands of these, you know, like extinct volcanoes, and wait for the eggs to crack. And then, as the eggs crack, the dragons emerge, and they seek out the boy or girl who they think is the best candidate for them, and who knows exactly what the criteria are, but they seek them out, and they establish this kind of telepathic bond with them. Now, as the book kind of unfolds, Lessa, who is really just kind of obsessed with revenge, is taken to the hold, taken to the dragon where, and when she gets there, surprise, surprise, she impresses the gold dragon. And the rest of the book is kind of told from her perspective. McCaffrey does a really great job of introducing us to this world through Lessa, who really knows nothing about dragons. I mean, yes, she's lived on Pern, which is the world that all this takes place on all of her life, but she really knows very little about dragons and dragon rider society and the larger threat that people face. And as she's introduced to the dragons, we're introduced to the dragons. And, you know, I gotta say, McCaffrey just does a really awesome job here. First and foremost, she does a great job with the dragons, portraying dragons in a realistic way as tools to combat this alien threat, this mindless alien threat. The threads that, when the threads fall from the sky, they're just kind of like these bundles of almost like virus-like material that, when as soon as it hits the ground, it starts eating anything it can find. And she does this awesome job of just creating these living, breathing dragons. And, you know, the telepathic bond that these dragons share with their riders is just kind of a masterstroke, because it gives you this additional insight into these really beautiful creatures. The other thing that she does well is the whole idea of the political struggles that are ongoing. And this is one of the things that this is why I say this book really influenced my future love of sci-fi, because this is the kind of stuff that I really enjoy in science fiction. I love it when it's not just the big bad alien threat or the big, huge, wondrous concept. I mean, I love those things too. But when it all comes together with some political intrigue and some real good storylines going on, you know, that's what really makes science fiction for me. And McCaffrey does this here, because we have the pressures of the dragon riders who know that threat is returning, and have seen evidence that it is actually going to happen. They have to convince the rest of the world that they're right, and they also have to come up with, because their numbers have been declining over the long years, they have to come up with ways of actually dealing with this, and because no one actually remembers how you're supposed to fight threat. It's been like 400 years. So that there's that element of just kind of discovery. And then there's the political intrigues of having to deal with the holders who haven't come around yet, who don't acknowledge the threat. And once they do acknowledge the threat, are, you know, jockeying for position while this, you know, worldwide threat is falling upon them. So she does a really good interplay there, just a really good weaving it all together to just create a story that, man, I just ate up. Now, is it kind of pulpy? Yes. Has it been a while since I read these books? Yes. But, you know, before I did the review, I kind of sat down and flipped through the pages again. And, you know, it's still there. I still just love these books. Now, these books actually kicked off a huge series of Pern books. I don't know exactly how many have been written, but I think it's got to be upwards of 20 at this point. The first three books, Dragonflight, which is the book that I'm reviewing right now. I think I mentioned that early on. But you know what? You know, it's great that I actually plan these things out, right? Anyway, Dragonflight is the first book in the series. Dragon Quest is the follow-up, and then The White Dragon. And these form kind of like the core trilogy for the Dragon Riders of Pern, and they're definitely McCaffrey at her best. The whole saga unfolds against this... Sorry, let me back up. The whole saga unfolds over the course of like these 20-odd books, going forwards and backwards in time, telling the story from different eras. And, you know, some of them are better and some of them are worse. But these three books are really... You know, I just loved them. You know, what can I say? They're just great freaking books. So I wholeheartedly, you know, if you haven't read any of these Dragon Riders or Pern books, I definitely recommend picking up Dragonflight. I believe that you can pick up the trilogy in one collection. You really won't regret picking up these books. I have all the details for this book up on the show notes, as well as a link where you can learn more about it by going to Amazon.com. So that'll about do it for this week's edition of Nuketown Radioactive. If you'd like to contact me, and you know, I'm always looking for the promos, I'm always looking for audio comments, you can get to me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can also Skype me, my username is Nuketown. You can check out the forums, please check out the forums, they're there, they're waiting for your posts, but unfortunately they haven't really been highly trafficked. I mean, people go and see them, but nobody really posts, which is kind of unfortunate. Anyway, you can check out the Nuketown forums at www.nuketown.com/forum, and there's also forums that are available through the Science Fiction Podcast Network. I'll include a link directly to those in the show notes. That's it for now, folks. I'll talk to you later.